Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Trump's four-year reality TV show turns violent. The question is, was yesterday the season finale? We can only hope. And today on the show, Kellyanne Ferraro on the Zantac recall and mesothelioma, and the latest from the North Coast Labor Federation. Good afternoon and welcome to the Thursday, January 7th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. And you can also check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast. And if you miss a show, just go to awfradio.com, and we have all the shows archived right there. We have two guests on the show today. Joyce Chambers Ricard will be joining us. She is one of the many fine attorneys and one of our great sponsors on the show, the attorneys at Kelly and Ferraro. Joyce has been with the firm since 2002, and she first functioned as the firm's senior litigation paralegal and litigation manager. And 3 years ago, actually 4 years ago, 2017, still getting used to 2021, she became an associate. She's a graduate from Notre Dame College in Ohio, and then a graduate of the Cleveland Marshall College of Law, where she earned a certificate in health law. And her areas of practice include pharmaceutical litigation, products liability litigation, asbestos, workers' comp, personal injury, and lien resolution. Now, we're going to get into two things today. And we've done many shows on this Zantac recall, and we're going to bring you up to speed on where that is, just to refresh you a little bit. The Food and Drug Administration reported that some acid-reducing and heartburn medications contain a cancer-causing impurity. And the name is too long. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. But the short name for it is NDMA. NDMA leaches into the soil and contaminates the water. This chemical was originally developed to aid in the production of rocket fuel. Yeah. Usage stopped after high levels of it were found in the air, water, and soil samples near manufacturing plants. It has since been found at several industrial sites. It enters the body when someone eats food or they drink water contaminated with NDMA. How it ended up in Zantac, that's what we're going to talk about on the show today. And Zantac and all the generic versions of it, it's called ranitidine. They've been off the market for quite some time. And apparently, ranitidine has been linked to a variety of cancers, including prostate, breast, thyroid, bladder, colorectal, esophageal, intestinal, kidney, liver, ovarian, pancreatic, stomach, testicular, and uterine cancer. Well, I remember when they first did the recall, there was just about three or four cancers. Boy, did that expand. So that's the first part. Then we're going to get into helping mesothelioma victims in Ohio and nationwide. Now, the firm is based in Cleveland, Ohio, but they practice nationwide. The nationwide number is 1-800-398-1795. You could call them and you get pretty much a free rundown. You can talk to them. You can fill out a list of questions that maybe you were exposed over the years. What's happening to you? Have you had some visits to the doctor? Coughing, things of that nature. And when you take a look at mesothelioma and asbestos, I mean, this is something that's been very, very common for many, many years, especially in the construction industry. And they have a list of hazardous job sites in Ohio. So just to zero in on Ohio, because we have a nationwide audience, here's the General Motors plant in Norwood, Warren or Mansfield, the Columbus Steel Company, General Electric in Canton, Goodyear Aircraft in Canton, the Ford Motor Company in Cincinnati, Dayton Power and Light, Akron Gas Company, B.F. Goodrich in Avon Lake, the Diamond Rubber Company in South Akron. Those are just to name a few. I'm sure there's more. And again, this is a serious situation. A lot of people have died, and they're still working out lawsuits with loved ones. So Joyce Chambers Ricard will be our first guest. Now, we were supposed to have Sherrod Brown on the show today. That's not going to happen. It will happen tomorrow. But with the events that occurred in Washington, I'll get to that in a minute, you have to understand that Sherrod could not be available. At one time, he was in fear for his life, like so many, in the Capitol building yesterday when they were trying to finally officiate Joe Biden's victory. So joining us later in the show is Len DeCosimo. Len's a great guy. He is president of the local musicians union, involved in the national union, the American Federation of Musicians. He's also head of the North Coast AFL-CIO Federation of Labor. And there's been some changes in the local federation. He's going to talk about that. Harriet Applegate, who's been with the federation for a long, long time, has retired, and the new executive secretary is Dan O'Malley. And also, Daryl Bell is the president. Now, Daryl has been on the show, oh my God, many, many times. He is with the American Federation of Government Employees, Local 31, another proud sponsor of America's workforce. And Len is the treasurer, actually. And again, he's with Local 4 of the American Federation of Musicians. We're going to talk about politics. I'm sure I'll have some comments on what happened yesterday. And the music environment. Here we are in a new year, same old story, and a lot of venues shut down. Right now, they're hoping maybe in the spring, maybe in the summer, late fall. Hard to tell. It's hard to figure out this coronavirus. And now you have the mutation happening, which is even more contagious than the first one. So Len DeCosimo is going to join us. And again, Senator Sherrod Brown will be with us tomorrow. Well, we saw some history yesterday. Wasn't that amazing, what we saw on TV? The sad part about this, and I can't seem to understand, everybody knew that there were going to be protests in Washington, and it seems that they were not really very well prepared for it. I'm talking about the numbers of law enforcement and the National Guard, which didn't arrive till later on. I'm sure that's going to be investigated. Bottom line is this. Thousands of Trump-incited domestic terrorists. I'm reading a post here from Mark Gruenberg, our labor writer, but you know he's calling it as it is. They were Trump-incited domestic terrorists, insurrectionists. They invaded and overran the U.S. Capitol, chased senators out of their chamber, forced the U.S. House to shelter in place, and halted the January 6th count of electoral votes, plan to certify Joe Biden's election to the presidency. They do this all the time, every 4 years. This is a normal procedure. Certainly not normal this year. Their objective, says Mark, to overthrow U.S. democracy and keep Trump in office by what D.C.'s attorney general called an attempted coup d'etat. One professor, an expert in right-wing paramilitary movements, told NPR it was, quote, organized, ideological, all to achieve a coup. Yes, it's illegal, but this is war, a Trump supporter tweeted on social media. What are union leaders saying about this? Plenty. Rich Trumka and Postal Workers President Mark Diamonstein blasted the coup attempt. This is what Trumka said. We are witnessing one of the greatest assaults on our democracy since the Civil War. Today's attempted coup has been years in the making, as Donald Trump consistently spews venom, conspiracies, hate, and lies to his supporters. They are carrying out his wishes, and far too many Republican lawmakers have enabled and even encouraged this violent threat to our republic. Emboldened by an electoral college system that creates an avenue for insurrection instead of simply certifying the candidate with the most votes, this is an effort to violate the constitutional rights of every law-abiding American, and the labor movement will not stand for it, not today, not ever. At this hour, our democracy is under unprecedented assault, unlike anything we've seen in modern times, an assault on a citadel of liberty, the Capitol, Biden declared. These scenes do not reflect the true America. They do not represent who we are. What we have seen is a small number of extremists dedicated to lawlessness. This is not dissent. It's disorder. It's chaos. It's sedition. I call on this mob to pull back now, Biden said in the middle of it all. It's insurrection. The invasion started about 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Later, the Capitol complex was enveloped in tear gas inside and out. Rubber bullets were fired. An improvised explosive device, a bomb, was found at Republican headquarters 2 blocks from the Capitol and then disarmed. One Trump supporter was shot in the chest. She later died. We learned this morning that a total of 4 people died yesterday. 4. The woman and 3 others don't have IDs on where the other ones had come from. But what does that tell you? Trump's got blood on his hands. No doubt about it. Inside, I don't know if you saw the pictures, but it was unbelievable. They overran the Senate chamber, with one literally climbing the walls, another clad in a Made America Great Again hat and a large Trump cape, sat at a senator's desk, rifled with the lawmaker's papers, then took a selfie. One rioter sat in Mike Pence's chair after he was safely evacuated. Many of the Trump supporters brandished Confederate flags. Others smashed windows, overran Capitol Police barricades, and the police themselves stole papers from lawmakers' desks and other storage cabinets and generally threatened lawmakers plus staffers and journalists covering the count. They chanted "murder the media" at one time. One observer noted a Trump supporter wore an anti-coronavirus mask, but they weren't checked for firearms. Trump has made defiance of masking a signature response by his supporters. One tweeted beforehand in caps, "Live as a free American and bring your arms." George W. Bush even commented about this. He said, "This is what President Trump caused today. This is an insurrection incited by the President of the United States." You know, they had to shut down Trump's Twitter account, and there was some talk of invoking the 25th Amendment to say, hey, enough is enough. I mean, a number of his cabinet members got together and said, the man has lost his mind. He cannot continue to be president. That has since died down. And he finally issued a statement through a spokesperson saying, okay, Joe Biden's going to take office. He said this was probably not going to be peaceful. I mean, he said this. There was no question about that. Months before the election, he would not guarantee a peaceful transfer of power. And obviously, what we saw yesterday was not what you call a peaceful transfer of power. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Our segment with Kelly and Ferraro coming up next. Don't go away.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. When you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. Let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show, Joyce Chambers Reichard, and she is one of the many fine attorneys at one of our great sponsors, Kelly and Ferraro, kelly-ferraro.com. Practicing nationwide, that toll-free number is 1-800-398-1795, and there's two subjects we're going to get into today. In this first segment, we're going to talk about the Zantac recall, which has been all over the news for the last couple of years. Zantac is off the market, it's been off the market, and it's apparently linked to a number of cancers. And I ran down a few before, and we'll get into some specifics with Joyce. Hey, Joyce, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us, and good afternoon.
I was talking about this chemical. It's a carcinogen that's in Zantac, NDMA. I'm going to let you pronounce the name, because I'm afraid when I look at it on paper, I don't even want to attempt to. Can you tell our listeners what NDMA is and why this chemical, which is apparently in our soil, how it found its way into Zantac?
So interestingly enough, Zantac began on the market in, I think it was 1983. They began selling that in the United States, and it became one of the most widely used drugs on the American market. And within 3 years of its release, it became one of the first drugs to generate $1 billion in sales. But before it was recalled, I think the drug was generating sales around like $129 million per year, and that was a figure as of 2018.
Wow.
So in September of 2019, when the FDA announced that it was had dangerously high levels of a known human carcinogen called NDMA, it issued a public warning. And in response to that warning, three of the largest retail manufacturers, or pharmacies rather, Rite Aid, CVS, and Walgreens, they pulled Zantac and their generic alternatives from the shelves. Now, NDMA, what happens with that chemical is a person taking Zantac or ranitidine and regularly ingests that chemical, which is known to cause cancer, NDMA, it reacts with the stomach acids in your body, and then it forms cells, which then ultimately end up causing cancer. Now, you've gone over some of the cancers that it causes, and some of the bigger cancers, which we haven't really talked about in our last session, were prostate and breast. And I know that I don't even think we mentioned breast last time, but we've come to find out that Zantac has been known to cause breast cancer. It's one of the leading cancers, in fact, that this drug is linked to causing. So we've been contacting our clients. We've also been, getting phone calls from individuals who are looking at our website and looking at some of the research that they're doing online. And we've actually gotten a substantial number of clients who've been diagnosed with breast cancer, and because they've taken Zantac for a long period of time. So to talk a little bit more about the NDMA portion of it, we obviously don't know why, for all the reasons why people develop cancer. It's complex, obviously. The argument with the Zantac is that users are exposed to certain molecules that are found in the medication, and that ultimately combines to form NDMA. It is a known human carcinogen, and the formation of NDMA then increases the chances of a genetic mutation of the cells, ultimately aiding in the formation of cancer within the body. So we ask our ask the question, why does this happen? But because users of Zantac are potentially exposed to extremely high levels of the NDMA over prolonged periods of time, which according to the FDA exceeds daily intake limits, testing was done, and it showed that a single 150 milligram tablet of Zantac causes exposure to NDMA at a rate of 26,000 times greater than the daily intake limit that's set by the FDA. So what we have been waiting for, and what we talked about in our last session, was that there is a study, and that study is being done by Sloan Kettering, and we've been waiting for that for quite some time now, which we're hoping that will come out at the beginning or mid of 2021, that will ultimately tell us exactly what the different links are between Zantac, ranitidine, and the cancers that we've previously discussed, some of which are prostate, breast, and stomach, for example, bladder. There's just a long laundry list of cancers that this drug causes. So it's just important for our clients and those individuals out there who may have been exposed to it to just contact us if they've been exposed to Zantac or ranitidine, the generic form, and know that if they've developed any of those forms of cancer, they should give us a call. It's important for them to just call us and let us know that, you know, they've had these symptoms and they've had these diagnoses and that they've been exposed to this drug, and whether or not we can help them. We certainly will talk with them to find out if it's something that we can do to represent them and file a claim on their behalf. Because right now, the court is processing cases and claims, and amidst the COVID pandemic, they, in fact, are moving through the litigation quite seamlessly. It is taking a little bit more time than usual because we don't actually physically get to go to court. We have to conduct everything via Zoom or electronically, you know, through the means of phone and whatnot. But, you know, the judge is doing a very good job of trying to keep the litigation moving so that claimants can find their day in court.
So it sounds that Sloan Kettering study that you referred to, that could be significant in this moving this case forward. Am I correct in assuming that?
We do believe that that is going to give us a lot of information that may not necessarily be out in the public right now. And it's certainly going to confirm the things that those of us who have been working on the Zantac litigation for a couple of years now have believed all along, which is that Zantac and, you know, the NDMA and all of which that I just spoke about confirms those cancers: stomach, bladder, liver, breast, prostate, pancreatic, colon, colorectal. We do feel that that study is going to substantiate the link between Zantac and the cancers.
Now, Joyce, I notice you're shying away from the real name of NDMA, and I don't blame you. I'm trying to do it here. Give me an opportunity to try this out and see if I'm close. Okay. Nitrosodimethylamine. Am I close in saying that?
That's close. I still trip over the the name as well.
Okay. Yeah, we'll just stick with NDMA. Yeah, it's ridiculous, the name on that. I mean, it's got almost every letter in the alphabet in there. But the bottom line is, yeah, the bottom line, there's a lot. And I took Zantac. I mean, I'm on Prilosec now because, I mean, as you age, your body doesn't work like it used to. And obviously, we eat a lot of different kind of foods, spicy foods. We love the spicy foods. There's alcohol involved. And obviously, you're supposed to do everything in moderation. But the bottom line is, everybody at one time in their life is going to have some kind of a stomach ailment. And as you pointed out, I mean, they were making millions and billions of dollars when you add it all up. And so there's a heck of a case here. And I've heard many attorneys, it might have been some yourself or someone from your law firm, this is very similar to the tobacco litigation of years ago, because you had the tobacco company said, no problem, you can smoke those cigarettes, you're not going to get cancer. And then finally they said, well, those studies were, kind of covered them up a little bit here. And then eventually they had the litigation. Are you in agreement with that this is very similar or even perhaps bigger than that?
You know, during our last segment, I mentioned the fact that we were in various different meetings, and one of the common themes that we've heard is that this is one of the biggest toxic torts the United States has ever seen. And so, to be honest with you, it could be as big as tobacco litigation. It might even be bigger.
Joyce, let me ask you this. We have a nationwide audience on our podcasting and a lot of people listening, and they perhaps took Zantac like myself. What's the best advice that you could give them going forward if they're encountering any medical problems?
My best advice would be, obviously, first and foremost, if they haven't already sought medical treatment, to do so. That's the most important factor, obviously. And then should they be able to substantiate the fact that they've got this cancer and they've taken either Zantac or ranitidine for a long period of time, give us a call. That long period of time could be a year, 2 years, three, four, five, how many ever. We would much rather that a person calls us to determine whether or not they have a claim as opposed to never calling and not finding out. It's more important for them to get our free consultation and determine that than it is for them to not find out. It's kind of where I stand. I would much rather a person give us a call and find out that, you know, there's something that we can do than for them to sit there and suffer through this cancer and know that this company, or these companies rather, potentially expose them to this product and not receive compensation for it, if it's possible.
Very good. All right, Kelly and Ferraro. There's two L's in Kelly, two R's in Ferraro. It's kelly-ferraro.com. You can go there. A lot of good information posted on that website. And the toll-free number nationwide, 1-800-398-1795. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Joyce is going to talk about mesothelioma, another $10 word, maybe a $20 word. Later in the show, Len DeCosimo is going to be joining us from the North Coast Area Labor Federation, also the Musicians Union. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio.
United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, and that would be AWF Union Podcast. And you can follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Joyce Chambers Reichart, one of the many fine attorneys at Kelly and Ferraro, proud sponsor of America's Workforce. We covered pretty much Zantac, the recall there. And again, if you miss anything, just go to the website kelly-ferraro.com. Lots of good information there. Let's get into a mesothelioma. And Joyce, we do a lot with the building trades, and I know mesothelioma, you're dealing with asbestos litigation here, and I know asbestos was banned many, many years ago. I believe it was in the late 70s, but it's still pretty much prevalent in the environment. And Kelly and Ferraro has done a lot in this arena. Can you just bring us up to speed on what mesothelioma is and how people can be compensated if they develop this disease? Go ahead.
Sure. So mesothelioma is a cancer of the lung or the lining of the stomach. And over the past 23 years, our firm has dedicated our careers to helping mesothelioma victims recover compensation from asbestos manufacturers and distributors. We have extensive experience in this area in handling mesothelioma claims, and we obviously would advise anyone of their rights regarding that. Kelly and Ferraro has represented union members from all types of unions and industries. We also represent union workers' family members who've been diagnosed and developed cancer from what's called secondhand exposure to asbestos. Asbestos exposure has been linked to numerous illnesses and cancers, which most of which are including mesothelioma and lung cancer. Our firm has experience in proving the source of a person's asbestos exposure and holding responsible companies who should be held accountable for bringing that asbestos into their workplace. What our firm does is we determine the source of the asbestos exposure from the various different companies. If the particular company is no longer in business and has formed what's called a bankruptcy trust, because they've sought bankruptcy protection in the court system, we then pursue a claim against that bankruptcy trust. So we try our very best to obtain compensation for individuals for any of their exposures, not just for one individual exposure to one specific company. So what that means is we not only go after those companies that brought their products into the facility, but we also go after the facility if possible through a workers' compensation claim.
So when we're talking about the victims of mesothelioma, isn't this something that shows up later in life? I guess, you know, you could be at an occupation for many, many years doing fine, but then you develop this. Can you explain that part, Joyce?
Sure. There is what's called a latency period. And what that means is mesothelioma or other cancers associated with asbestos don't actually appear in a person until later in life. So say, for example, you were a building trade worker or, a steel worker, for example, who worked in the steel mills or in the trades for, you know, in the 1960s, the 70s, and then didn't develop mesothelioma or any other form of cancer associated with asbestos until later in life, for example, 2019. Last year, for example, though that's what's called a latency period. And what happens is the asbestos essentially sits in your body and then begins to form these cancer cells, which ultimately end up causing the cancer.
And what would the signs be? I mean, perhaps to me would be coughing, shortness of breath. Can you go over that part?
Certainly. Obviously, I'm not a medical doctor, but some of the signs are very symptomatic to your everyday common cold. Bronchitis, we see a lot of our clients who go in for bronchitis, sinus infections, you know, the common cold, with regard to the stomach, which is called peritoneal mesothelioma. Those problems begin where they're starting to see symptoms of gastrointestinal issues, bloating, severe pains, you know, things along those lines. I know that with pleural mesothelioma, which is the lining of the lung, those symptoms typically mimic your cold and flu symptoms, and then severe pain, you know, pain in your lungs, pain when coughing, pain when breathing, shortness of breath, things along those lines.
Well, your firm has been monumental in tackling this issue. And if you go to the website, you can read about the settlements that were accomplished over the years. I see one is a $20 million verdict, a $17 million verdict, $8.2 million verdict. I know you have been with the firm for quite some time. Litigating this kind of thing, I would imagine you were in the middle of some of these trials. Very complicated, complex. Can you give us a little glimpse on how difficult this is? Because you know, sure, these companies, and you mentioned a lot of these companies are not around anymore. That's got to be difficult in itself. Can you address that part, Joyce?
Sure. Actually, I was very honored to be part of the $8.2 million verdict that is also referred to on our website. These cases are very complicated, and they involve not only complex issues, but they involve people. And that's where our firm comes in and has been able to handle cases in a different way than most firms. We listen to our clients. We hear them out. We listen to their story. We take the time to learn about their particular exposure and how they were exposed. And this is the way that we're able to then turn around and find out who actually caused their exposure to asbestos. You know, we're kind of a family operation. You know, we are people who sit and listen to our clients. We care about our clients. These trials are complex. They last anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks. I've been involved in various different trials since I started with the firm. I began as a paralegal, and then I became an attorney in 2017. So I've seen both sides of it. I've seen the paralegal side as well as the attorney side. And I'm very proud to be part of the firm. I believe that we're doing good work for people who've been exposed and who unfortunately may have also lost loved ones because of these diseases and because of exposure. This is something our firm has done for the past 23 years since its inception. And, you know, the science, the medicine part, the science part of these cases, the testimony and the length of time that it takes to build the case up to the point to where it goes to trial, and then the evidence that is presented before juries, it's very complex. And so it takes a lot of time to get to the point of a jury, you know. And so we take a lot of time and a lot of pride in making sure that juries understand the science and they understand how individuals were exposed. And it's not an easy process. It really isn't. And sometimes it's not easy to figure out who, in fact, manufactured that product that was put in place, which ended up causing someone's exposure. You know, there's a lot of digging that needs to happen, and sometimes the records just aren't there. And so, you know, we have to go out in the community and find those people who worked with those individuals and try to find testimony that will prove that a particular product was at a job site. And our firm will diligently go out and do that.
Well, I'll tell you, that's how you win those big verdicts. That had to be a great day in your life when you won the $8.2 million. I'm sure you had a team of lawyers there, but boy, you had to be jumping up and down on that one, huh, Joyce?
You know, I was about maybe a year out of law school and graduating and passing the bar. So it's still one of those things that gives me chills. I was very happy that day, and not for myself. It was more so for the family, because we were able to bring justice to that family. And that's what we work for. That's what we do every day. That's why our job is what we,
exactly.
why we do what we do.
You know what's going on in my mind right now? The movie Erin Brockovich with Julie Roberts. I mean, she worked so hard to accomplish a legal verdict there, and it was amazing. But that's exactly what happens at Kelly and Ferraro when you get these huge verdicts like that. 8.2 million. Good stuff. Joyce, great job. Thank you so much for joining us today. Again, the number, practicing nationwide, Kelly and Ferraro, 800-398-1795. 1-800-398-1795. Kelly-Ferraro.com. Two L's in Kelly, two R's in Ferraro. You take care. Happy New Year to you. Stay safe, and hopefully we'll get out of this pandemic, okay?
Thank you. You too, and thanks again for having us.
We got it. Joyce Chambers Reichard right here on America's Workforce. All right, we're going to break. Len DeCosmo heads the North Coast Area Labor Federation. Well, he doesn't head it. He's a treasurer, but he's involved deeply in it. He's going to talk about a number of things, including what happened yesterday in Washington. That's next on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's L-I-U-N-A.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. 216-666-2185. You can find them online at ulagency.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro. Trial lawyers.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. And don't forget, we are available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Let's go to line number two, and welcome to the show, Len DeCosmo. Now, I told you yesterday we were supposed to have Senator Sherrod Brown. Well, because of the events in Washington yesterday, we're moving him to tomorrow. And I got an email from the senator's people last night saying, because of the events, we can't do anything. And at the time, I guess he was might have been hiding under a table. Unbelievable events, history-making events. And Len DeCosmo, welcome to the show. I'm sure you were watching TV yesterday. You got a front row seat to history, didn't you, huh?
Unbelievable, Flash. But I got to tell you, I can't stop smiling today because I'm still so optimistic about the future.
Good, good. Yeah, you have to be after seeing yesterday. My gosh. And finally, we got the vote that Biden is going to be our next president. And this all backfired on so many senators as well as congressmen that wanted to carry this out. In fact, they would have probably still been debating this today if it wasn't for the events that happened.
If they didn't have the rules that governed what the event was yesterday, you'd have Senator Cruz reciting Green Eggs and Ham on the floor again.
Yeah.
You know, can I do it when I'm at work? Can I do it when I'm a jerk? I'm Senator Ted Cruz, you know.
Yeah.
But yesterday, besides all of that, in addition to Biden and Harris certified by the U.S. Congress, Georgia elected its first Black and Jewish United States senators.
Isn't that something? Yeah, yeah.
It also provided one party to have control in all three chambers on Capitol Hill.
I know, and I talked about that on the show yesterday. We record the show in the morning, and that was supposed to be the big story, okay? But that just got neutered when everything exploded in Washington. But it seems to me, and you know how Trump has, it's always got to be about Trump. He was probably ticked off of what happened in Georgia. That backfired on him. So look what, you know, he's in the middle of this whole thing in Washington. And I don't know.
He's the
I don't
best
know.
when it comes to taking the headlines. He's one of the best. But
yeah,
still think you have the first woman vice president, a person of color, first time elected. It's just so good. And after 4 years, Flash, if the most we have to worry about is whether President-elect Biden is too conservative, I'll take it. You know, what's he going to do about publicly funded elections, healthcare, whether it's women's reproduction rights, the vaccine, college debt, correcting the tax code, the systemic racism we saw yesterday, all of these things we're going to wonder about and see what one party rule can do to maybe readjust some things.
Yeah. Can't come soon
that's
enough.
That's my optimism.
Yeah. Well, I, you know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. And hopefully yesterday was the end of all the chaos here, because it's been 4 years of chaos. Let's move forward. We've got some news to report. Some changes in the North Shore AFL-CIO Federation of Labor. I see you're the treasurer, so you're the money guy. And the new guy, with Harriet Applegate. Now, she's been with the Federation for quite some time. She's retired now, right?
She retired. She was around for over 10 years. She came to the position when Senator Brown first ran for the Senate, and her predecessor, John Ryan, was appointed to be Sherrod's state director for Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And that's when Harriet came in, and now our new executive secretary is the longtime North Shore's Central Labor Council's political coordinator, Dan O'Malley.
All right.
And so Dan O'Malley and Daryl Bell, who's the president of the American Federation of Government Employees, is the president. Sherry Obrensky from the Cleveland Teachers Union is the chairman, and I'm the treasurer.
Yeah. Yeah, we know Daryl Bell very well, because he's been on the show a number of times. AFGE, okay. Local 31, is one of the sponsors of the show. Good guy. Good guy. Works over at the VA, and he's been doing great work over there for his members. So we got a new lineup here. Tell me a little bit more about Dan O'Malley. Now, isn't he in the Lakewood, Ohio City Council? Is that right?
That's
is he
right.
President of the council or something like that?
He had one term as a councilman, and now he's the council president. And
gotcha.
So he's bright. He's smart. He has a political side to him because of the position he held before for the Central Labor Council. We've been meeting since our elections, and we're talking about things like increasing our influence and our brand, labor's brand, in terms of additional political action, additional education, additional events that we produce out of the local Four Music Fund. And the reason we're doing this is because 2021 is a big election year here in Northeast Ohio.
That's right. We've got
the mayoral race. The cabinet appointment is going to leave District 11, the U.S. Congress seat open, and you know these are important races. And I think to have a presence reminding the citizenry that we have to vote every year is a good thing. I look and see what Stacey Abrams and the New Georgia Project has done for Georgia. And I wonder how we can reproduce that in other places in the country.
Boy, that would
Wouldn't that be
great.
A nice new year?
She did something amazing in Georgia. And I tell you, what's the old line? Hell hath no fury as a woman scorned. She ran for governor of Georgia. She lost. And that was contentious. They got rid of a lot of people on the voting rolls. But boy, did she come back. Whoa.
Did she come back? That's right.
It would be good to see some of that in Ohio because, I mean, I don't know. You're a lifelong Cleveland guy, and Ohio is pretty much – I'm hearing some of our guests on the show calling it Eastern Indiana. You know, it's a red state now. So I think Labor's
got – Confederate state of Ohio, yeah.
The Confederate state, okay. Labor's got a lot to do here. There's no question. So are you in the planning stages right now of expanding Labor's imprint? Where do we stand?
Well, we're trying to figure it out because we're still in the middle of a plague. But however, what we have discovered that we can do is host rallies, which we did all through September and October for the presidential race. They were not super spreader events. We had plenty of politicians and local leaders and activists speaking. We drew crowds in public areas, and there was a certain effect to it, and I think we can build on that. It's going to be difficult for, you know, in our business, in the fine arts, for large audiences to come together indoors for a number of months now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, outdoor events where there's a lot of air volume is still the best bet to have larger crowds assemble safely.
So where are we with all that? I know you represent the Cleveland Orchestra, and you got Blossom. Is Blossom going to happen this year since that's an outdoor event? Where do we stand?
It's to be determined. I think a lot of this is going to depend upon how the vaccine is rolled out and how effective it is. We didn't get off to a good start because of the transition between presidents, administrations. But you know, that's something that's a bit premature to answer right now. I can say that Playhouse Square Foundation is looking to resume in the fall their theater and their full schedules for their theaters. That's the tentative right now.
Yeah.
But we've got a long way to go yet. And there's a lot of work to do on rolling the vaccine out, man. It's to be seen, Flash.
What are you hearing from your brothers and sisters around the country? I know you keep in touch with the American Federation of Musicians. Is it pretty much the same case in various parts, or are there parts that are better, worse than others?
Well, the one news that came up just in the new year that we're all very upset about is the continued actions of the Metropolitan Orchestra to their artistic staff and to their support staff to perform the operas in Manhattan, the Thrift Penny Opera. They furloughed the stagehands, and now just recently for the New Year's Eve gala, they're not using the Met Orchestra, which is, you know, AFM. They're hiring non-union labor.
Oh, no.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
All right,
so there's good news and bad news. With the orchestra here in Cleveland, we're working on a third settlement since the plague began, and we have a good working relationship. So the circumstances here are completely different. And, you know, I think I've mentioned that before to you.
Yeah, well, it's a strong union town. There's no question. No question.
Yeah.
To your credit, I might add. All right, Mr. DeCosimo, you take care. Thanks for filling in for Senator Sherrod Brown today. Jesus, I still can't get over the events that happened yesterday in our nation's capital. Hopefully, this is the end of it. I equated this to Trump's four-year reality TV show that just got canceled, and this was the season finale.
He may be going to cable, Flash. We're going to find out.
Oh, you know, at this point, all we can do is laugh at it. Yeah, it's sad, but my God, we got to move on from here, and we got to get America together.
We're going to do it. We're going to keep doing it, Flash.
You got it, my brother. All right. Len DeCosimo, North Coast Area Labor Federation. You can follow him on Twitter at Leonard DeCosimo, and also the American Federation of Musicians at Local 4 AFM. You take care. We'll stay in touch, and we'll talk to you down the road, all right?
Thanks, Flash. Bye-bye.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we have the progressive populace. We'll be joining Sherrod Brown and Joyce Goldstein, our labor leader. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.